And the last thing anyone should ever want is to be on social media owned by a billionaire that spies on you.
Alleging that Amazon abused its position as a leading online marketplace in the U.S., but then using the data from these independent sellers to better make their own private label products.
So long as you love your friend more than you hate him, he can make life worse for you and you'll stay there, making things good for business customers by making them bad for end users.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Welcome back to the Open Markets Podcast. My name is Eric FJ.
And my name is Sink.
And this is the ASMR episode. I got my mic working again. It wasn't working last time. I had to leave and go in my room to avoid the plumber that was there. But I'm glad Sink and Aryan's audio was awesome on that episode.
And I'm also happy that, you know, your neighbor's plumbing's fixed this week. So we have normal session audio.
Yeah, because how else could we do the ASMR version of this episode if I'm just on some goofy Bluetooth headset? I really appreciate everybody engaging in the episode last week. It was a wild learning experience for me, and I think the technology with FIPS is really, really important. And it seems like you were telling me before the show that a lot of people in the Sovereign community are really, really abuzz about it.
Mm-hmm. It definitely looks like there's a lot of activity and a lot of testing going around. And it also just seems like, you know, like as a protocol in and of itself, or like a layer, let's put it like that, it enables a lot of people to be very creative in what they want to set up and what they want to test. So it's interesting to see that there's a lot of buzz going on there.
Yeah. No, it's exciting. It feels like there's something there. Really, really exciting future for, a free and open internet that we all dreamed of. And we're all trying to build together here.
Yeah. And also like the technical, you know, local first kind of ideas of, you know, like having a citadel where even if the broader communication goes down, you can still operate and still be, doing. I think that's an interesting thing that the legacy system can't really provide to that extent. So there's definitely something there as a new narrative that's being shaped.
Yeah, it totally changes the game theory around, what can be enforced by what powers, and you know how they're going to have to behave towards the people that they're supposed to serve. That's what to me this technology is all about. I'm really excited. You have people like Aryan and Jonathan, is his last name Corgan, working on this, and Gigi and all the people in Sovenge, kind of swarming around this idea of FIPS, and excited to see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we also have a bit of follow up from last episode. We have a couple of zaps also that came in. We have one from Shadrach that says, "Awesome chat, next level sovereignty." Well, I wholeheartedly agree with the next level of sovereignty.
Thank you, Mr. Shadrach. He also posted a song. He zapped us twice, didn't he?
I think so, yeah, twice.
Just go check out the songs that Shadrach is posting. He's clearly more up on the Freedom Tech music than I am. I'm gonna have to just go through his profile and listen to all the music, get myself up to date.
And we also have a zap from Reed. He says, very bullish on other stuff. Noster apps like Shopster, Plebeian, that market. I think we are heading into a time where long form events and marketplace Noster apps will start to shine. I agree. Like it's getting to the point where, you know, the work of many different individuals is starting to show. We're getting to a good space.
You know, that's a good point, Reed. And I don't know if you intended to make it, but you know, long form content and markets may come together at some point in product reviews. That's something we're excited to implement at some point. So couldn't agree more. And thank you very much for the zap, sir.
And then we also have one more zap from a travel light, but with no message. There's also a follow-up from technical debt that I'm trying to quickly see here. I think it was about the parallel with reticulum. But it's not easy to follow in the fountain dashboard.
We started a whole discussion in the fountain dashboard.
Reticulum sounds more like Laura, while FIPS, so I can't even see the rest of the message. Eclipse fountain, please. Like the UI is not okay. Maybe we'll do a follow up on the next one if I copy the.
We'll dive into a technical FIPS discussion on every episode.
Next time we'll talk about technical debt. that's it about follow up for Zaps. We still had some stuff that happened since last recording. Most of our notes were like almost 2 weeks old, so we dove in a little bit deeper into what Stake is building with Hosted Nowhere, which I thought was an interesting project last time, and I've been delving a little bit into it. But he also made a bit of a draft proposal for hidden collections for the Gamma Market spec that I think we'll put into the next Gamma Market call a little bit as well for review, because I think hidden collections as a piece for open marketplaces is a little bit contradictive, because we also want everything to show up, of course, in different marketplaces, but there is definitely interesting functionality here that can be shared between us and the Nowhere platform.
There's definitely something there, because as a merchant, you may want to, especially if you're selling something like collectibles or art, you may want to add some exclusivity to some of your inventory. And I think this allows you to do that. Yeah, of course, it could be considered closed or whatever, but this is the social protocol, and so your store is open and social, and you may want to have that little kind of exclusive come behind the counter, come in the back door, come into my speakeasy and get the real good stuff here. That's part of a branding exercise that people might want to do, and Nostr's mm-hmm. limitless in that way, and until we totally have room for something like that. So that's a really cool PR, Mr. Stake, and I think the group's definitely going to want to check that out and look into it. Did you want to talk about his Hosted Nowhere project just briefly?
A little bit. I've been trying to make up some notes, because there's interesting stuff with just embedding all of the information, as dense as possible into the URL structure. And then I think what was interesting about it is that for the offline support, you would have to have the PWA installed, so that when a link gets scanned, the phone can see that it's from this PWA. So it will initially open it there, and then since all the information is in the link, it can resolve the shop in and of itself from everything that's in that QR code. So we just discussed it a little bit, because if you have 1,000 products and it becomes very dense with information, these QR codes will be probably impossible, of how much information kind of maybe gets squeezed in. But it's an interesting way to look at how these offline support shops kind of work, because you have to work with what apps allow you to do. And if it's a PWA, you're very limited to what you can do from the host device. Right. So it detecting this link is a very interesting, not hack, but a way that we're allowed in the sandbox of iOS to do something with a web application. So
it was interesting. I was trying to wrap my head around it. So tell me if I'm right with my understanding. He encodes different pieces into the URL extension, and he's got like his own protocol, maybe as a way of thinking about it, where each piece of the URL means something or tells the PWA to assemble a website in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And by encoding just those, letters and numbers in a certain order, the PWA can kind of like say, oh, that's, you know, one of these blocks, that's one of those blocks, that's one of these, and piece together a site just from the URL. And in that sense, the offline piece is like, you can be offline if you have the builder engine, for lack of a better word, on your device already. And you receive that code and the builder engine goes through the code and rebuilds the site just the way someone else would if they were online. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of close to what he's doing?
Yeah, close. Yeah. Like technically it's the correct example. But you can already see, like, if it's like an image and stuff like that, images, you know, are like a couple megabytes, or like maybe, you know, if you scale them down, you know, a couple kilobytes and stuff like that. But that's still a lot of information to start encoding just in the URL structure. So, you know, it doesn't scale super great to the extent so that the more information, the more products that you have, the bloatier the code gets. And then, yeah, the PWA, you bypass basically the restrictions of the native application. So it's something that you can install as a bookmark, right? And then the URL can be the data transmission piece, let's put it like that.
I mean, regardless of whether it works or it scales or not, this is the type of experimentation that's fun, because we might grab a piece of it, or he might discover something as he's making something, like, you know, hidden collections that could, you know, belong in our specification. So thank you. Is it Stake?
Stake, yeah.
thank you, Stake.
Thank you, Stake,
for your work on all that, and yeah, I appreciate you coming and joining the group. And actually, Stake submitted a PR to Conduit that we merged as well. So, thank you, Stake.
There you go. No, I like these types of shops as well, because they might serve a specific niche purpose within the commerce space. And to the extent that they're also, once they come online, and they might need to sync up to an extent, you know, if Noster is the pool where they get their information from, you know, then we're already contributing in that part as well. So the next one is, I'll be the Buzz show notes. So there's an email that they send out every month. And in this one, there was an article about agentic commerce, a guide to L402s, X402s, and MPP. It's interesting to understand how to monetize APIs and resources, in the idea that, you know, you can put a request as a payment header into your build. And I think it's something we haven't discussed too much, but it's something, you know, where you have to, you know, bring the SOAP close by, because, you know, it also opens the possibility to allow for stable coins to be accepted. So I think it's something interesting that we might have to look into a little bit deeper, because we're mostly into the Bitcoin ecosystem, of course. But when it comes down to adoption of payment rails, and especially when it comes down to like agentic payments and stuff like that, it's all going to be headers and just requests, right? So it's not going to be the fancy UI that you need to check out with. It's going to be just code that the agent knows what to deal with, and it needs to be performant and small. So
it's funny, one of my co-founders at Conduit actually sent me recently an article about X402, and I kind of quit back to him. I was like, oh, L402 already works. You don't need seven different coins and whatever else. But it does seem like they were trying to mimic with the new X402 update something that L402 has been doing for quite a while. They have in crypto land, again, yeah, get your soap out. I've had issues with, you know, their gas fees. I think, you know, so their APIs and getting really, really expensive really fast, and then trying to figure out how to not break things. But, you know, kind of another fun example of where, you know, Bitcoin was already winning. Even in this table that they have on the Albi article, you can see that the L402 fees were negligible, sub cent. And then X402 was low, layer 2 gas dependent. Oh, I don't have to go up to layer 2. I've got to do, it's just like, you know, I'm not that bullish on X402. I'm pretty bullish on L402 though.
Yeah. Same.
But good for Albie for letting everybody in the article.
Yeah.
Even the crypto people that they have a spot. I wouldn't have done it, but
yeah, no. I think it's an interesting way to look at the adoption of the 402 space, since it's been, you know, a code that we kind of left behind until it was kind of necessary. So it will be interesting to see how these developments kind of continue, and especially since the people from the stablecoin narrative, you know, they'll look into implementing it their own way and their own specifications. So it's always a bunch of stuff to learn from what they're doing, even though, you know, we're rooting for a specific narrative every time.
Yeah. Can they just do stablecoins on Lightning? Isn't that something that they've been talking about for a while? Is that actually happening?
Yeah, I looked into that with the Taproot asset stuff a while back, but it's, I don't know, like at some point Tether was going to roll out the red carpet for it, but I haven't seen any real follow-up from it to that extent. And the way that it works with Taproot assets and universe servers and stuff like that, it's quite complicated setup to an extent. Like I understand how it all kind of works, but it's not very user-friendly. And the rug pulling on being able to authenticate that this is, you know, legitimate or like legit, like what is a legit, you know, USDT, right? Well, what does it even mean? So but if something doesn't get, you know, the same type of backing and you get rug pulled because, you know, somebody made a token that they claimed was USDT and somehow you swapped it for the for Bitcoin, it's a weird narrative there. Until Tether kind of rolls out the red carpet and says this is officially, you know, the universe server that says like this is original USDT, it's very difficult to verify to an extent.
They've been talking about it for a while. I think I remember reading an article like over a year ago. But it's coming. And I think even the leader of Tether there, is it Paolo? Went on a podcast and talked about it and how exciting it was. And and then I guess, you know, you just get into that infinite loop of soon and then you're toast. Yeah. The other thing I get worried about with Taproot assets is, isn't there some kind of a weird feature where if you talk about it, they send a bunch of religious zealots after you for talking about it? Be careful.
Yeah. Taproot assets are, what is it? A dangerous topic, right? Like it's not really used for great stuff in the wild. So the use case and utility for it is basically just encoding more stuff onto blockchain or onto like an L2 and then... Yeah, no. I don't know.
People take that very, very seriously, as I understand.
Yeah. It's an interesting space, but I think, especially with the Tether stuff, from the last thing that I saw from their hackathon was the wallet SDK. So they have like a very fancy wallet that they're really trying to push, and from that point, they're trying to have like integrations also with some of the Bitcoin space. So I think the red carpet has been mostly rolled out towards the people from Arc, from Arcade, to kind of facilitate the idea of stable coins on Bitcoin. But yeah, that's maybe for like a different topic, or maybe we can get a guest on to kind of explain this a bit better.
Let's make our most controversial episode of all time. We'll go from FIPS that everybody's for, and then we'll go into
stablecoins.
You know, stablecoins, Taproot on Bitcoin. Everybody be pissed off. Yeah. No one will know what to think. This would be great.
Right. Well, we'll put the soap away. You know, we'll talk about more.
Let's talk about other stuff. I'm getting uncomfortable.
So for the Nasser Boutique, I don't really have any type of updates. Like I'm mostly looking into normie promo. Like, how do I get this out of the Bitcoin bubble and kind of get just normal people to click the button and have a shop? You know, people who've never seen Noster before. So I'm working a little bit on the copy on the website so I can have a better explanation on and guide on how to do these types of things. But in general, I'm mostly just looking on ways to advertise outside of the Noster bubble. And that also kind of brings me to the topic again of the native apps. I think to some extent it's where we'll definitely push again later on in the episode a bit about, but it's something where the UI friction of having a website now compared to having a native application is something that is just a little bit too much friction for normies to accept.
This is true. Do you want to talk about that now, or do you want to talk about it?
We'll later. Keep it for a bit later, but it's okay. Why the boutique promo for Normiland is a little bit pushing into that narrative as well, since it's the website in of itself is done. So signer extensions or ways to connect to the site and to the portal is kind of just extra integrations. But where we really need to like push towards is where the people really sit, and that's usually on their phone, right? Like the only old people use a browser and extensions. So it's for Gen Z and stuff like that, it needs to be a mobile app. So there is some friction there, but we'll get back to that in a bit, I guess.
Deal. I have a lot to unpack around that.
The next piece would be to mention a bit about our recording schedule. Since we're a little bit slammed with planning, we'll skip a couple weeks, but we'll come back swinging.
To promise everybody that although we are going to miss a couple weeks, we do promise that this is not going to become yet another abandonware Noster project. We will be back in full force. May 30th, we'll record and probably publish shortly after that. This is not an abandoned pod. Don't forget about us over the next couple of weeks. We'll continue to be active on Noster. And what else were we planning on doing? We're going to push some PRs. We're just going to continue to prove our presence. And maybe we'll just repost a bunch of old episodes or something like that. We'll run the reruns. We don't have any current content.
We do have the next Gamma Market call on May 19th. So we're definitely inviting everybody to come join in there. We'll maybe see if we can turn it into something that we can publish if people who can't join, but it's always a little bit difficult since we have a lot of people in the chat, and you know, we don't want to broadcast too much information there. So it's we'll see how that goes, but it's definitely something to plug since our next episode is May 30th. So by then, the next Gamma Market call will already have passed. So if you guys want to have some questions or have some ideas for the market space, May 19th. But we'll also publish the link and stuff on Noster once we're there.
Yeah, I think one day we could find a way to make it safely public, because I think that, you know, in an open markets specification, that is ultimately the right thing to do. But I agree with you. At the moment, we need to be conscious of people's privacy and who's working on this and whether they want to be shown in a certain way. And so trying to navigate that balance. But I personally would like to push towards public calls, even if maybe not everybody is able to just join and talk. I think there's some skin in the game to contribute to the conversation, but I do believe everybody should be able to at least view and listen at some point. So, well, maybe that's something we discuss on the call itself on May 19th, and we'll when we publish our next episode, we'll publish a summary of what happened there.
Then we have our first topic, kind of ish. It's a bit broad because we were talking about key rotation before the show. I'm not going to
be the most uncomfortable episode of all time. Go after all the hot topics.
Yeah, after washing our mouth with soap about stablecoins, now we're talking about
now
key
let's
rotation.
Dig into key rotation.
Yes. I'm not fully disclaiming on what I said before the show about, you know, about how to kind of have like a narrative of doing a key rotation, but it kind of means just, you know, abandoning your key that you have now, you know, at a safe point in time and moving on to a new key. But it kind of came up as a discussion topic since we're talking about for example, NIP61 or the new thing that Alex Gleason was pushing for on-chain Zaps. So the idea that your NSEC is also, you know, part of your wallet structure, but it's also what Wisp is doing to Oryx knowledge as well, right? With the Spark.
I think they're doing a little bit something different with Spark. It's definitely not on chain, but there is a really smooth flow where you can basically unpack your Spark wallet from any app that's using the NSEC as the decryption key. Mm-hmm. And that to me is really interesting UX because now, you know, I think for the record, Nostr Wallet Connect is great, but it is an extra step at the end of the day. And what UTXO has done there with his implementation of Spark Wallet is just to say, hey, well, you're already signing with this key. Why not just, you know, keep this as a wallet as well? And but that's a little different than what you were saying, Gleason and Ditto are doing. They're doing something with on-chain Zaps, which seems, I'm extremely confused by that.
Yeah, I agree with like that they're like different ways of storing money with your NSEC, but at the end of it all, like we boil it down to like the same thing, right? Like if your NSEC gets compromised, that means also that the wallet also gets compromised, right? Because if there's no True. Second password on it, you know, it's just free to play. If that's on chain or if that's with eCash or if that's with the Spark wallet, you know, if the credentials to access the wallet go through Nostr, then yeah, well, if the key gets compromised, you know, the wallet's compromised as well. So that's kind of what we were saying about, like, there's a little bit of debate now of the idea of like, oh, you shouldn't store money, you know, associated with you know, your NSEC, right? Because if that's leaked and compromised, then, you know,
your
people
money's
might
gone
be
too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But we've also built with Ion on the previous podcast, also said with eCash as well, right? Like it's like your actual physical wallet, right? Like don't put all your money in there. Like it's just small spending wallet. And maybe in your lifetime, you know, you lose your wallet 3 to 4 times, right? Like it sucks, but it happens, right? If yeah. if you're being responsible with how you do the distribution there, it kind of makes sense.
But yeah, you shouldn't walk around with your life savings in your pocket. You shouldn't go to the town square with, you know, your entire retirement account, you know, sitting there on your person. So, I would go so far as to say, you know, if you're doing something like that, if you're keeping, you know, some crazy amount of money and not, you know, putting it somewhere safer as you're walking around a very new and relatively experimental protocol, you may just kind of get what's coming to you. There's a little bit of Darwinism here with the Bitcoin. You know, what are you going to do? The other interesting thing, people are concerned about this, and like rightfully so, like be responsible, don't put your life savings on there. But, you know, we've been raw dogging our credit cards into web forms, you know, along with our identities and all these other things for 30 years. And, definitely a lot of bad stuff happened, and definitely we need to improve, you know, get people to not do that. And there's been a lot of, you know, innovation around that stack to, you know, to make that secure. But I'm kind of like, you know, my NSEC is the most secure password I've ever had. And I only use it with signers. I only use it with this and that. It's like, to me, that's a pretty secure wallet for me to have, you know, some zapping cash in there. You know, it's not my main wallet, but I'm happy for the user experience personally to have the lowest amount of friction possible to be able to hop between apps and Zap and maybe make small purchases and different things like that. And I mean, user story, you know, N of one of Eric FJ, I'm personally okay with it, but maybe I'm just going to, you know, get wrecked, and then yeah, like maybe someone tell us in the show notes, you know, why I'm going to get wrecked and why I'm silly. Cause I'm open to feedback on that opinion for sure.
I think when it comes down to the wallet stuff, and that's why I'm always like this big pusher for like the eCash type of narrative, because just as an onboarding, you don't have to deal with, you know, any type of liquidity from a Lightning perspective. because the mint manager basically has to deal with all that type of jazz. But also, like, what I would say about the on-chain Zaps is, like, people do have a tendency to store more of their, you know, larger types. Well, not tendency, like, people store their larger wealth on-chain, you know, when it comes down to Bitcoin, which means that if you start sending money from and to, we might actually, you know, you start doxing it yourself a bit more with wallets, you know. So that's kind of where I think the privacy point of, like, the eCash thing kind of sits so nicely, because, you know, if it's small amounts, you know, eCash is kind of perfect for it. And once it kind of becomes a larger amount, I would say on-chain is the only place to actually store it, right? Like, so.
Sure. Yeah, so, I don't get the on-chain connected to Nostr thing. I'm going to have to, like, look into this, because this is confusing me both from, you know, a privacy perspective and also, like, a UX. And isn't that cost you? Like, most Zaps are smaller than the transaction fee that you'd pay for that. So what's going on here?
Taproot assets and fee structures have already improved a lot. So it's not as much, but it's still, like, so since it still has to settle, like, on chain, like, it takes a while for the payment to actually go through. So that's one thing. But I do think it's an interesting push, because at some point in the Nostr history of, you know, trying to invent Zaps and bring this type of stuff to the market, we kind of abandoned the idea to an extent. While when it comes down to adoption in and of itself, like, right, we want everybody who has an NSEC to basically already be equipped with a wallet, right? Like, what that means, you know, we kind of not really know at this stage. It's either being Spark that's a lot of Nostr clients are switching to, or it could be an eCash implementation, or it could be this that Alex Gleason is pushing forward. So it's just something where you, like, we just want to have less friction, and that means they have to be able to receive payments from day one without having anything set up, right? Just a key.
I agree with as a goal. I think that yes, needs to be, and it can be a blend of these things. Like, you can have eCash in, you know, like, a temporary offline state that gets swept to another wallet, that then when you collect a certain balance, UI and the client says, hey, get this out of here. This is not, like, the best place to keep this amount of money. Maybe you should consider, you know, sending it to somewhere else, your own Lightning node, or even, you know, swap it off chain using one of the many tools, or sorry, swap it on chain using one of the many tools that you have and get it out of here. It's not, you know, this is not the place to carry all your whole wealth. Like,
no.
Yeah.
No, but I think it's something that we're looking into, right? Like all Nostr developers are looking into, how do we address this UX problem of them just being able to receive payments in the initial phase, and just being able to say, like, hey, this is probably gonna be some type of custodial or at least linked solution, because, you know, the NSEC needs to have the key for the wallet, so it needs to unlock it. My suggestion there, to some extent, would have been, like, something like BIP39, where you have, you know, your seed phrase from the Nostr key in and of itself, and then add a password on top, right? So to unlock the wallet, you have to open, like, you have to add an extra word to the seed phrase, something that you can say.
That sounds so pretty smart.
That I've been playing with it with the Lightning build a little bit, but it's something there where, you know, like, even then, you know, you're still having wallets linked to each other, so, you know, like, privacy and doxing information, like, we all have to take that with a grain of salt in the adoption phase. But then we definitely need to say, like, hey, if this is, you know, $50, $100, whatever your threshold is, you know, once it gets to that point, you know, move some of it away.
I mean, just tying this back to markets for a second, because I suppose that's the topic of our podcast. the UX of just having that wallet working wherever you go, you know, that's sort of tied to the NSEC key pair that you create, is really important for markets as well, because eventually we want NIP99 events to be in multiple apps. And so why couldn't someone just wander over to a profile, like what they're selling, and from each app just be able to maybe spend some of those zaps that you earned from shitposting on some awesome Great Ghee or Oshi or, you know, what beef jerky. Shout out to BJ. Like that should be a user story that we make possible in this world. And I think it only, it can happen with Noster Wallet Connect, but it, you know, as you get these other tools involved, it's too many steps, it's too many clicks, you know, for the user and, you know, the codes that, you know, like plus N, you know, number, whatever, like that's really intimidating for most people. But maybe if we can figure out the insect piece, it's less intimidating, and we'll fulfill my dream of a kid shitposting his way into some, you know, some sats oil or something. You know, feeding your family through shitposts, I think, is where we wanna get here with Noster.
Yeah. Also, big shout out to Sats Oil, you know, who was selling oil before, you know, it was very popular to sell it for Bitcoin. So I thought,
yes, Sats Oil was front running Iran on that one. Yeah, for sure.
Every episode, you know, we either front run the milk market or the oil market, but you know, at some point, somebody's going to take notice of what we're saying here. But it brings us a little bit back to like the next topic as well, like something that happened to me on Noster, like I would say almost I think 2 weeks ago, but somebody roasted me for the UI of the other marketplaces. So I'm just pushing the
it's your fault, man.
Yeah. I'm continuing the roast. One of the things that we were trying to push towards a little bit with the previous discussions was like the native apps narrative. And I think that's something that while most of our marketplaces are like websites, which means that they need to have an extension or you basically copy paste, you know, your NSEC in there, which, you know, like we're trying to at least, you know, teach people some good behavior on how to keep keys a little bit clean and sanity. So I think there's something there that we kind of needed to push, because also like if you go to Shopster today, like you don't hit any type of inventory. On Plebeian, it's kind of the same on mobile, because you have such a big header saying, you know, like sell products, that it kind of picks up, you know, a lot of the space. And for Conduit, it was the same. Like I linked to the normal conduit.market place, and it's like, you know, it's still under a subdirectory. So it was kind of the thing where I was trying to push a little bit, just a little bit forward to say like, hey, the UI and the UX that we're trying to get towards is good for websites, right? For what we can support there. But for native builds, we're kind of stuck again with like the gateways, right? Like we need some type of way to publish these apps. My first attempt at doing this is like 20 years ago. The process was horrible. I'm pretty sure it hasn't improved at all. So for our foundation, it was one of the things that I brought up quite early, where it was like, hey, I think the trend is going forward that we're going to have a lot more independent developers, like small teams. And they might go through the rigmarole of trying to, you know, set up an actual business and you know, get a dev account and a publishing thing and yada yada. But maybe for our foundation, it would be interesting to push forward that we provide the publishing platform for other developers who might not want to go through that type of process.
I think we definitely, that's a great use of where the foundation is going. So what you're saying is we would become the body through which a bunch of open source applications could then publish native mobile apps, so that we would help kind of bootstrap these, you know, these developers that don't, you know, want to go through a few of those administrative steps. And then we have a few apps under our umbrella that actually get into people's hands in mobile, which I do agree is really, really important. Am I understanding that correctly? Where you're going with that?
Yeah. I think for example, with Conduit and Plebeian and Shopster, where the team's already like established, you would, you know, go through the process yourself of getting the publishing for sure. of your application. But for people who like are joining the space, it can be a good way to get into that native space without us being stuck in webland, you know, where everything is kind of nice, but we kind of need to have these applications that just feel, you know, just as good as what the other native apps are providing. And a PWA is good, you know, it's awesome stuff, but it's not the same. And, you know, we've been handicapped by Apple for that by quite some time. So we have to play on their field.
Well, and I'll lead the witness here into the next part of the discussion. I'll tell you why, you know, we didn't start with mobile. It was I didn't want to handle anyone's NSEC. I didn't feel comfortable with that. I think I saw at one point a while back HODLBOD got there was some kind of vulnerability where things were exposed, and you know, I immediately thought to myself, well, if someone as smart as him, if that can happen, you know, to him, I'm not to that caliber. That could definitely happen to me. So I'm putting guardrails around, you know, myself and our own team before, you know, because I don't want to handle people's NSECs. So, and by the way, quick plug for Conduit, our UX is getting better each week, and I do have something on the board to make the mobile, even in the browser, the mobile experience better. Because yeah, right now when you scroll, it is one product at a time, and I think we can make that grid a lot smaller, or the items rather in the grid a lot smaller, and make that a little bit more friendly to scroll. But it's getting pretty tight. I'm excited to, you know, for the next few merges, are really going to increase performance. But anyway, that's not what I'm talking about. What I am talking about is the fact that we don't have mobile signers for iOS is a big deal, because that's another hurdle besides, you know, the App Store stuff, is that, you know, most people shouldn't have to handle NSECs. It's just, you know, I think at this point it's bad practice. But then at the same time, all right, Apple, let us have a signer that works and isn't kind of some strange implementation of a noise in the background or something that, you know, gets aggressively shut off by iOS. I think it's worth highlighting because Doc NR, you know, posted something a while back that I highlighted. He started publishing something called Clav, and you know, he's saying, you know, Android has Amber, iOS users are stuck raw dogging their NSEC or using throwaways, and you never get the full PWA experience because NIP 07 doesn't work in PWA mode. So he went for it and he tried to make a signer that, you know, didn't use the whole silent audio thing that he felt was fragile, which I do agree with it. I love, by the way, what Primal was trying to do there. I'm not talking shit about Primal, but I tried it with some other apps and it didn't quite work. You know, iOS, you shut something down really quick. Maybe it was the settings that I use on my phone personally, but it did seem a bit fragile. So what he's trying to do here with Clav is hopefully a little bit more resilient, hopefully a little bit more reliable, that allows us to, you know, have this signer functionality across different apps without it breaking. And yeah, we'll post that in the show notes. And something I'm going to test out. Our team is going to test out soon because we would love. I do agree with you, Mr. Sink. We got to get marketplaces on mobile. That has to happen, and it has to happen in apps. It can't just be you know, in a mobile browser, because that's mm-hmm. that's too messy.
Yeah, it just came up out of the. Like the vintage clothing market, like they just have like an app, you know, like you open it, you take 5 pictures of the item, you basically slap half a title on there and a price, and it's basically on the marketplace. While what we have now is you would have to take a picture with some device, offload it to your laptop, presumably, you know, and then kind of use a desktop signer, like a browser extension to upload the listing, which is, you know, slow. and not really what we're looking at. Like, there are too many steps there, too much friction. And I think also why I wanted to push this forward was the Divine, like, as a Nostr app. Like, it's very...
I used it this morning.
Yes. It's very basic and simple in functionality. Like, there's no Zaps from what I could tell and stuff like that.
There's
right?
Not.
So, but that's kind of what we're looking at, you know, like when it's native, you know, people just use it more. Like, it's a different installation process, and people have it on their phone constantly. You know, PWA installs never really took off. People don't understand because it's a bookmark, right? Like, you just bookmark a website to your home front. So, yeah.
No, and shout out to all the merchants. And I think we've got hundreds of merchants on there with listings. We've got thousands of products. Shout out to all those people who have gone through all the steps that Mr. Sink just outlined there, because, you know, you're the early pioneers. We didn't even make the UX good for you yet, and yet we still have all that. To me, that shows the excitement there is around this concept of decentralized marketplaces where you do truly own your own store and you control your own destiny and your own connections and all that. We do need to make it better though, because there's probably some, you know, freedom loving people out there or just even regular folk that just want, you know, this level of connection with their customer that's possible through Nostr, that are not going to go through all the hoops that these awesome ride or dies have already gone through. And there's work to do. There's a lot of work to do.
Next up, our kind of slow ending topic, but it's the idea that for the Open Markets Foundation, we're maybe thinking of, like, we're going to propose in the Gamma Markets call as well, the idea that we might fork the Gamma Markets spec under the Open Markets Foundation umbrella to have a bit more of a standing with pushing the specification. That also would mean that we would be pushing it to, or like using NGIT, like actually pushing it on Nostr as well. So our code base now is all still on GitHub. So we're thinking about, or like we're saying that we need to kind of move off of there, of course. And then the reason why I kind of wanted to bring this up also in the Gamma Markets call is, from what we can tell from the specification in and of itself, is like it attracts people from very different marketplace incentives, like maybe ride sharing, food, restaurant, Airbnb. You know, you can go on for quite some time. And most of the flows kind of sit after like a shopping cart narrative. Like you either order a ride and then you go through the payment process and the ride shows up. So we're kind of seeing that there's a lot of similarities in these types of marketplaces. And to address that more into like a bit of a system that we can help guide people towards extending the marketplace spec as broad as we can, not just into the e-commerce listings specification, kind of maybe makes sense to have a new review at that, and then also look at the PRs that have been submitted and kind of see what we can kind of bake as a cake out of all that good jazz. And then also the second part why I wanted to address it is a bit to highlight a bit of the history in there as well. Since this marketplace specification has also been forked, or like not forked, but has been through a couple
reworked.
Iterations.
Yes.
Shaven down.
Yeah.
So I think it would be interesting to highlight the history of it before, you know, the narrative is so far gone that we kind of don't see where this stems off from. But to address that a little bit, it was the NIP99 spec from Jeff G, who does the white noise Marmot protocol, who started this off mostly as a job sport, like something to post.
Classified listings. Yeah, it was like many beautiful things. I think it happened almost by accident. He was filling a different need and made a very simple specification for classified listings, which I think, as we talked about in our very first inaugural episode, is kind of the root of any commerce interaction. Is like, hey, I've got something for sale. It could be a product, a service, or anything like that. And all that is really just that event. Is it 30402? I've got something for sale. Contact me. That's it. That's the root of all the events. And then from there, we branch off into e-commerce. I've got something for sale. Can I put it into my cart? Can I check it out? How much is it? You know, what are the properties of this item? Where can it be shipped to? And all these other things that you require for e-commerce. Maybe that looks a little bit different for ride sharing. I'm located here. I accept these types of rides. I'm going this distance, whatever. Here's what I'm willing to pay, blah, blah, blah. That's maybe a different path from the, hey, I've got something for sale. You know, food might have its own constraints. It might be similar to marketplaces in some ways. It might, you know, have time limits that are really important. You know, it might need delivery drivers and different things. So there's a whole path that you can go down from. But I think the really exciting piece about this is what Jeff G published for a specific purpose actually has become this seed where all these different paths can now kind of grow out of. And yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to steal your thunder there. But
no, I'm 100% on board with that. Like it's the notion that like a marketplace specification is also like why it's kind of NIP 15 versus 99, because they fill different voids in the same space. We mostly just looked at the same thing where it's like the smallest unit of a marketplace is like a classified listing. And what that entails, that can be very broad. How you actually end up doing the payment can also be very broad. But we kind of want to put some rails and some guides here to help people who want to do a ride sharing app, for example. They can build, you know, using different specifications out of the NIP repository to get their pipeline kind of done. But that also means that the second person who builds a ride sharing app will have to probably use a lot of this same structure, right, to be interoperable and to have the same push. So it's kind of like you could say it's a ride sharing marketplace, it's a food marketplace, it's a restaurant marketplace, you know, it's a real estate marketplace. Like all of these, like we just cut off the last piece because, you know, like it's a bit long. But in general, they all serve the same type of flow and purpose that we've all, you know, been used by on the internet by having like a checkout flow. So yeah, it might just be again like a good timing to look at the specification and see what we can push and then put that all under the Open Markets Foundation to have a bit more of a continuum on the PRs and on how to push this forward.
Yeah, I agree. We also, you know, back when we first formed the Gamma Markets thing, we had a way of, you know, kind of sharing the use of GitHub and, I think we basically all just kind of shared the password and now, you know, different people have left the group, joined the group and all those other things. So it's like, is that really the right way to kind of handle that? It's not very secure. So we also need to kind of lock it in and, you know, make sure we have a resilient strategy going forward. And Noster, you know, Git really does provide a good place for that. I was, you know, using it the other day to try to get, you know, Conduit listed on a couple of different Noster market or Noster apps listings. And I had never used Git before and it was quite smooth. It was all from the command line and went in and I saw, okay, now it's published. So damn. All right. Don't need GitHub anymore. Well, maybe we still do for some things, but
yeah, but
I think we're closer than I think a lot of people realize, to a future where, you know, we don't have this Microsoft running, you know, all of our Git workflows. Do you want to keep talking about Jeff G and what they're doing?
Do you want to slap the IPF piece a little bit in there?
Yeah,
how that fits in.
I don't know how it fits in. I also wanted to say, I don't know if Jeff is ever going to listen to this. I met him briefly at the Bitcoin conference. And at the time, I had no idea that he was the one that made the NIP99 spec that we were actually building on. So I had, you know, I had perfect opportunity to talk to him about that. And I just totally whiffed on it. So thanks, man. I really appreciate you making the spec that now we're all, you know, building decentralized e-commerce on. So really cool. But yeah, I didn't get to go to the event while I was in Vegas, but, during the Bitcoin conference, they also launched, something called the Internet Privacy Foundation. So, IPF, which is a new 501c3, nonprofit, dedicated to help. Help people work on the next generation of privacy tools.
And I think right now it's mostly dedicated to the Marmot protocol and white noise, but maybe we could talk more with him about that and see what the grander vision is. Again, apologize, I did not actually go to the event, but I wanted to give our accidental founder of the root of all decommerce a quick shout out. Yeah. So, but that brings us kind of into the next topic that we wanted to go over, which is an article published by another OG, Jesus, spelt G-triple-Z. That's how you spell Jesus in Nosterland. He was the one that I think was the primary drafter of the Gamma Market spec. Is that correct?
Yeah. From the point that Jesus was working at Plebia Market at the time, he now moved over to Context VM, right?
Is Context VM. Yeah. He left us, unfortunately, to go work on something really cool.
Yeah. But he was one of the people who instigated that we should push the NIP99 spec forward as well, from the idea that for the marketplace dynamic, we could probably find a better solution for some of the problems.
Yeah. And he was the one that wrote in, NIP17 into the new spec. And the article that he wrote probably a few weeks ago now was this excellent summary of all of the different communication protocols that we're trying right now on Noster, everything from NIP4 to NIP17 to Noster Double Ratchet. Is it Noster Double Ratchet? Is that what it's called? Yeah, it is. And then of course the Marmot protocol, which is Jeff G's white noise. And we felt it was relevant to highlight this article because the basic premise is that, encryption and privacy are obviously not the same thing. And when you are trying to do private communications over public infrastructure, you're inherently entering a adversarial environment for the goal that you are trying to reach. And he goes through all of each of those different standards in detail and talks about, the benefits and the trade-offs that you're actually making from a practical perspective. And what I really liked about what he did is he didn't just go, okay, this in theory should be able to do this. He looked at, what kind of patterns each of these different protocols generate on the network, how those can be observed, how that metadata can then be tied, back to an identity and all these other things. And I actually, took this article and ran a pass over our privacy policy in terms of service, because to me, it helped us be more honest about exactly the level of privacy that we were able to provide through these NIP17 channels, which I was previously to reading this article, I was calling these things private channels, and to a certain degree they are. But this article helped clarify my thinking around just exactly how private they are and what, guarantees you can make as a company building in the space, and which, promises you probably should not make. So I don't know how deep you want to dive into this. In my opinion, his analysis made a strong case for NIP17, at least as it pertains to marketplace events, being a good way to wrap things and keep them, private, and keep your activities, basically to yourself, and sort of allow you to mind your own business. But there are benefits to obviously what Jeff and the folks are developing with the Marmot protocol. There's benefits to Noster Double Ratchet, and there's just things that we can do in our clients as well that make each of these things better for the user, and have them understand the risks that they're taking and how private the communication is, how private or not private their activities are, and let the user make an informed choice rather. With how they want to interact with the network. So
it's also something just to look into and to highlight also to the extent that every time you do an order, every time there is this type of merchant to client interaction, you know, you're dealing oftentimes with very sensitive information, doxing information where people live. You're spreading that on a network where, you know, there's no proof of deletion, right? So the encryption is as will have to last as long, you know, as those notes are out there and they're retrievable. And I think that's also why, you know, from NIP 04 to NIP 17, you see like less metadata leakage and those things, but that like, because the, because of how the protocol works, it might be, leaking less data doesn't mean still that at the end, you know, everything is fine, right? Like you're using encrypted channels, right. But at the end of the day, if your key gets compromised, somebody might be looking over your shoulder, you know, for the last year and a half without you even knowing, right? Like if there's like a double ratchet where your keys, for every message are, you know, what is the thing when you spin, like it's not spin a wheel, but you spin a crank. Recite. Right. Oh, like every time you crank, like that's kind of the notion that a new key gets made for every message. So there's all these types of ways of how to deal with it on a protocol level. And then you also still have how you have to deal with your key security just in general, right? Like everything is private unless, you know, somebody's compromised your device, right? So there's all these types of narratives and loops that you kind of need to think of. And I think it's especially in a commerce environment where we're dealing with people's real addresses and things like that. It's one of the reasons why during the first, or like the, why during Sovereign Engineering 2, I wasn't super comfortable looking into the marketplace specification because of the encryption narrative and just dealing with doxing information that, you know, stays on the network that you don't have control over. So I pushed the narrative a little bit early into the idea that some of this stuff should just move to the channels that you're used to, right? Like if you see an item on a master marketplace that you like, you would open communication with them, maybe move it to Telegram, maybe move it to Signal, maybe move it to White Noise, you know, like kind of take it off of the master layer kind of in general to help also spread the idea that, you know, communications are not also, you know, bound to master to that extent. But in general, when we want to offer the best UX and an actual place where a merchant can do these types of things, like it also needs to be centralized a bit. So then we come back to master, and then the encryption is kind of where you either have to rotate after a while as a merchant just to, you know, be kind of safe. But even all your previous interactions will still be, you know, logged on Noster, right? So,
and just to be clear, the marketplaces are not, with NIP 17, the marketplaces are not storing people's addresses, but the addresses are needing to go to the merchant at some point so that they can ship something. Mm-hmm. So it is up to the user to be conscious of, yeah, who they're sharing their address with and, you know, through what channel they are sharing that address with. It's almost like no take backs, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, if you send your address to somebody, even if you sent it over something, let's say Signal, where you can sort of unilaterally delete something, they probably wrote it down in their shipping integration so that they could get you the product. Mm-hmm. So we do need to make something that is sort of good enough and better than what exists right now. And I think I would make the argument that we're building something better than what exists right now, because at least we're distributing. We're not all giving all of our addresses to Shopify. We're not all giving all of our addresses to Amazon. And there is risk with, you know, say there's a really popular merchant, they're going to have a lot of different addresses. Well, hey, we better trust that person. We better trust that person to be secure with their keys. We better trust that person to not, you know, dox all their customers and whatnot. Even though that's a potential attack vector, which, you know, very popular merchant is one example, that's still better than what's happening right now, in my opinion, which is everyone gives their address to Amazon, everyone gives their address here, there. At least we're forming more, what I'd say, node point-to-point connections which are not all interconnected at one central location. I think that that's an improvement. That doesn't mean that we can't go further. We can't take it a step further. And I like the idea of actually mixing message types for different types of information. Because, yeah, you may not want to put your address in a NIP 17, but what if, you know, that merchant on the other side could also receive, you know, Marmot white noise style event for that in particular. Maybe that's better for that specific part of the order chain. That's where I think we can make some innovations, is by like mixing some of these event types. And then, you know, you have a huge UX challenge of how do you, you know, unify that messaging screen. You know, we already have enough issues in Nostr where, like, you know, I can't talk to certain people on Primal if I'm sending a NIP 17. By the way, Primal, please implement something better than NIP 04. Please, please, please. So that's a challenge. And, you know, saying that as a non-engineer, when I go to actually implement something like that, I might be like, you know, kicking myself for even trying. But I think that's the design goals that we aim for, is, you know, use the best channel for the right type of information. And maybe you're right. Maybe you have to go out of band and use a different tool for certain things. And that's maybe what some people should do if they're not comfortable sharing certain information, or if, you know, they don't have a safe endpoint that they can go retrieve a package from, and you know, they don't want to dox themselves to anybody. That's the lifestyle that they live. You know, that you could do that through NIP 17 and say, hey, I'll hit you up on this other channel.
Yeah. And then this is, again, like, just only for like the small part of commerce where you need to ship something, right? Like we're oftentimes promoting local first, right? Like the idea that your products need to be at least closer in your vicinity. It's also, you know, cheaper and just better for the planet. So it's just the idea that same with like the ride sharing or the restaurant stuff, like that will be very geolocated to where you are. So you're not, you know, going to order food from 50 kilometers away. So it's so only when it comes down to like the type of doxing information spreading over Nostr, that might be, you know, always like something super dangerous, since it is a key that you keep for a while, and, you know, like there's no real rotation in place now. So that's always been the thing that, you know, would keep me up awake when it comes down to these marketplaces, where it's just like, at some point when it comes down to shipping, you'll have to deal with an address, and how you have to, you know, share that with other people. I've run a bunch of experiments while doing the cypher.space stuff. So some of them are quite unique.
I mean, I think I got to go back to the beginning of the show and give Shadrach another shout out, because that's a problem that he is actively trying to solve through, you know, his project. We'll have to link it in the show notes, because I don't unfortunately know it off the top of my head, but they're building something there around secure, or, you know, more freedom tech oriented shipping that's not centralized around, you know, one of the few providers. It's not I don't know, you know, how we would interact with it at this stage, but yeah, I mean, for anyone interested, go check out what he's building there. And apologies, Mr. Shadrach, I don't know the name of your project off the top of my head, but we will link it. Or should we just go look it up and say it and edit this in?
Well, I think we'll link it for now. The biggest thing that I was thinking of was like, what the hell is this title of this episode, man? Because like, usually I can kind of, you know, distill it, but this is like some type of bouillabaisse ragu, you know, like, Well, ASMR, like, I was thinking about, like, what is it called again? A smorgasbord? Like, right?
Smorgasbord, yeah. ASMR smorgasbord. ASMR mixtape. ASMR mixtape.
This one will definitely take a lot more editing, but we should maybe, you know, try and...
Throw a couple of ASMR. We got to get the real freaks in there.
The real freaks. Oh, God.
All of a sudden, all these, like, these different sex toys are showing up in the marketplace. Like, oh, what's going on here?
Are we getting a lot of zaps lately?
we did an ASMR episode. We started getting a lot of zaps. I don't know if I should... You decide whether you want to edit this out. I actually looked up a bunch of... No, we talked about this already with Calvadev, where, you know, what are the beachhead products for some of these types of marketplaces. And it's things that are on the fringe or things that get kind of pushed down the rankings because people are a little uncomfortable with them. And so maybe the flogging toys and the ASMR adjacent folks are a good target market for the Open Markets podcast.
Yeah, could be.
Come on down. Listen to us whisper into our mics. Fiddle with our monitors behind the screen.
Okay, Jesus, this will be so much editing.
You got to leave some of it in, though. You got to leave some of it in.
I'll leave most of it in, but
yeah, or put it like after the music or something.
I can actually experiment with a bonus episode. You know, like I'll
just a bunch of fucking around. Yeah, like the outtakes that you used to watch in the Jackie Chan movie. What was that? Rush Hour used to have like the best outtakes at the end.
Yeah.
Where it was just Jackie Chan just getting wrecked, or Chris Tucker just saying something like so stupid that everyone started laughing.
Laughing.
Yeah. Well, should we wrap it there somehow?
Yeah. Well, we'll try to make a bit of an outro here.
Thank you for listening to this long, winding, wandering discussion on all kinds of topics. And we're really excited to continue publishing this thing. As a reminder, we are going to be gone for a couple weeks and just posting reruns, promoting ourselves that way. But this, I promise you, is not a abandonware project. This is, we're going to keep going. And I'm not done talking to this man sitting here. We got a lot to discuss.
Yeah. And then we got to bring on some new cool guests as well. Like last episode was pretty good. So we're going to try to keep the high signal train. It's something that we discussed a little bit in the pre-show, where we're kind of getting a bit more of a hang of the show format that we're kind of trying to, put together to an extent.
Yeah, I think Aryan made a good analogy for what we were doing. You know, we're making pancakes. Right.
Yep.
The first one you make is kind of crappy, but by the time you get around to like, five or six, those are some tasty pancakes. So we're on pancake number 7. And that was our whole strategy here was just keep publishing and, get better as you go. Cause I think I love the attitude on Nostr, which is you can just do things and you should just do things. It's the only way you truly get better at things. So appreciate y'all hanging out with us as we continue to improve our pancake making skills.
Yeah. See you all next time on the next pancake.
Subscribe to the Open Markets podcast on your favorite podcast client. Follow us on Nostr or on openmarkets.pub. New episodes every week. Thank you for listening, and until next time.